Now, from the Oval Office, here is President Bush.
Just 2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait. These attacks continue as I speak. Ground forces are not engaged. This conflict started August 2nd when the dictator of Iraq invaded a small and helpless neighbor. Kuwait, a member of the Arab League and a member of the United Nations, was crushed, its people brutalized. 5 months ago, Saddam Hussein started this cruel war against Kuwait. Tonight, the battle has been joined. This military action, taken in accord with United Nations resolutions and with the consent of the United States Congress, follows months of constant and virtually endless diplomatic activity on the part of the United Nations, the United States, and many, many other countries. Arab leaders sought what became known as an Arab solution, only to conclude that Saddam Hussein was unwilling to leave Kuwait. Others traveled to Baghdad in a variety of efforts to restore peace and justice. Our Secretary of State, James Baker, held an historic meeting in Geneva, only to be totally rebuffed. This past weekend, in a last-ditch effort, the Secretary General of the United Nations went to the Middle East with peace in his heart, his second such mission, and he came back from Baghdad with no progress at all in getting Saddam Hussein to withdraw from Kuwait. Now, the 28 countries with forces in the Gulf area have exhausted all reasonable efforts to reach a peaceful resolution, have no choice but to drive Saddam from Kuwait by force. We will not fail. As I report to you, air attacks are underway against military targets in Iraq. We are determined to knock out Saddam Hussein's nuclear bomb potential. We will also destroy his chemical weapons facilities. Much of Saddam's artillery and tanks will be destroyed. Our operations are designed to best protect the lives of all the coalition forces by targeting Saddam's vast military arsenal. Initial reports from General Schwarzkopf are that our operations are proceeding according to plan. Our objectives are clear. Saddam Hussein's forces will leave Kuwait. The legitimate government of Kuwait will be restored to its rightful place, and Kuwait will once again be free. Iraq will eventually comply with all relevant United Nations resolutions, and then, when peace is restored, it is our hope that Iraq will live as a peaceful and cooperative member of the family of nations, thus enhancing the security and stability of the Gulf. Some may ask, why act now? Why not wait? The answer is clear. The world could wait no longer. Sanctions, though having some effect, showed no signs of accomplishing their objective. Sanctions were tried for well over 5 months, and we and our allies concluded that sanctions alone would not force Saddam from Kuwait. While the world waited, Saddam Hussein systematically raped, pillaged, and plundered a tiny nation, no threat to his own. He subjected the people of Kuwait to unspeakable atrocities, and among those maimed and murdered, innocent children. While the world waited, Saddam sought to add to the chemical weapons arsenal he now possesses an infinitely more dangerous weapon of mass destruction, a nuclear weapon. And while the world waited, while the world talked peace and withdrawal, Saddam Hussein dug in and moved massive forces into Kuwait. While the world waited, while Saddam stalled, more damage was being done to the fragile economies of the Third World, the emerging democracies of Eastern Europe, to the entire world, including to our own economy. The United States, together with the United Nations, exhausted every means at our disposal to bring this crisis to a peaceful end. However, Saddam clearly felt that by stalling and threatening and defying the United Nations, he could weaken the forces arrayed against him. While the world waited, Saddam Hussein met every overture of peace with open contempt. While the world prayed for peace, Saddam prepared for war. I had hoped that when the United States Congress, in historic debate, took its resolute action, Saddam would realize he could not prevail and would move out of Kuwait in accord with the United Nations resolutions. He did not do that. Instead, he remained intransigent, certain that time was on his side. Saddam was warned over and over again to comply with the will of the United Nations, leave Kuwait or be driven out. Saddam has arrogantly rejected all warnings. Instead, he tried to make this a dispute between Iraq and the United States of America. Well, he failed. Tonight, 28 nations, countries from five continents, Europe and Asia, Africa and the Arab League, have forces in the Gulf area standing shoulder to shoulder against Saddam Hussein. These countries had hoped the use of force could be avoided. Regrettably, we now believe that only force will make him leave. Prior to ordering our forces into battle, I instructed our military commanders to take every necessary step to prevail as quickly as possible and with the greatest degree of protection possible for American and Allied servicemen and women. I've told the American people before that this will not be another Vietnam. And I repeat this here tonight. Our troops will have the best possible support in the entire world, and they will not be asked to fight with one hand tied behind their back. I'm hopeful that this fighting will not go on for long and that casualties will be held to an absolute minimum. This is an historic moment. We have in this past year made great progress in ending the long era of conflict and Cold War. We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders. We have no argument with the people of Iraq. Indeed, for the innocents caught in this conflict, I pray for their safety. Our goal is not the conquest of Iraq. It is the liberation of Kuwait. It is my hope that somehow the Iraqi people can, even now, convince their dictator that he must lay down his arms, leave Kuwait, and let Iraq itself rejoin the family of peace-loving nations. Thomas Paine wrote many years ago, "These are the times that try men's souls." Those well-known words are so very true today. But even as planes of the multinational forces attack Iraq, I prefer to think of peace, not war. I am convinced not only that we will prevail, but that out of the horror of combat will come the recognition that no nation can stand against a world united. No nation will be permitted to brutally assault its neighbor. No president can easily commit our sons and daughters to war. They are the nation's finest. Ours is an all-volunteer force, magnificently trained, highly motivated. The troops know why they're there. And listen to what they say, for they've said it better than any president or prime minister ever could. Listen to Hollywood Huddleston, Marine Lance Corporal. He says, "Let's free these people so we can go home and be free again." And he's right. The terrible crimes and tortures committed by Saddam's henchmen against the innocent people of Kuwait are an affront to mankind and a challenge to the freedom of all. Listen to one of our great officers out there, Marine Lieutenant General Walter Boomer. He said, "There are things worth fighting for. A world in which brutality and lawlessness are allowed to go unchecked isn't the kind of world we're going to want to live in." Listen to Master Sergeant J.P. Kendall of the 82nd Airborne. "We're here for more than just the price of a gallon of gas. What we're doing is going to chart the future of the world for the next 100 years. It's better to deal with this guy now than 5 years from now." And finally, we should all sit up and listen to Jackie Jones, an Army lieutenant, when she says, "If we let him get away with this, who knows what's going to be next?" I've called upon Hollywood and Walter and JP and Jackie and all their courageous comrades in arms to do what must be done. Tonight, America and the world are deeply grateful to them and to their families. And let me say to everyone listening or watching tonight, when the troops we've sent in finish their work, I'm determined to bring them home as soon as possible. Tonight, as our forces fight, they and their families are in our prayers. May God bless each and every one of them and the coalition forces at our side in the Gulf, and may he continue to bless our nation, the United States of America.
From the Oval Office, President Bush, a report on what's going on in the air war in the Persian Gulf. He declared it a historic moment. He said the battle was started by Saddam Hussein on August 2nd, and he said that it's now been joined. Joining me at the White House is correspondent Wyatt Andrews. Wyatt, the speech was long on generalities and short on specifics.
The few specifics that we did hear, Rob, was that, as everyone expected, this is now an air war. The president specifically said that ground forces had not been joined. What progress report the president gave was, and these are important points, that the United States at this moment is targeting Saddam's arsenal, that is, his tanks, his nuclear weapons capability, and his chemical weapons arsenal. He said that his only report from the commander in field, General Schwarzkopf, was that things are working according to plan. So those are the only operational details that we got from the president tonight. As far as the generalities, as you point out, Rob, this was the president's, in effect, justification speech to the nation. His address in which he sought to justify the employment of this massive strike force that is going on as we speak tonight. He pointed to what he called the endless diplomacy that the Secretary of State, that the Arab communities, and two UN missions hadn't produced very much. And he laid, he went straight to the argument that sanctions, in his point of view, would not work, that he had to resort to this level of force. And finally, Rob, he several times promised the Americans in this speech, and this will prove to be critical over the time coming up, that the casualties will be few and that the United States won't fail.
We will get more details, I suspect, in a few minutes, in about 15 minutes, from the Pentagon when Dick Cheney, the Secretary of Defense, and Colin Powell deliver a briefing from the Pentagon. With continuing coverage of the Persian Gulf War, for White House correspondent Wyatt Andrews, I'm Rob Armstrong, CBS News, Washington.
This is CBS News continuing coverage of the outbreak of hostilities in the Persian Gulf. Let's pause 10 seconds to allow our stations on the network to identify themselves. This is CBS News.
And this is WCCO, St. Paul, Minneapolis, 15 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. Mostly cloudy skies in the Twin Cities with the temperature reading still 26 degrees.
This is CBS News continuing coverage of the outbreak of hostilities in the Persian Gulf. I'm Frank Settapani in New York, along with CBS News correspondent Doug Poling and military analyst Ben Works. Just to summarize, for those of you who may have joined us in midstream, President Bush has just addressed the nation, announcing that the attacks against Iraqi forces both in Iraq and in Kuwait were continuing even as he spoke. The attacks began a little more than 2 hours ago, shortly before 7 p.m. Washington time. The president stressed that ground forces were not engaged, and he said that the U.S. troops would be going after chemical and nuclear facilities, as well as Saddam Hussein's tanks and artillery. Even as the president spoke, there was a demonstration taking place outside the White House. Crowd estimated in the thousands. We don't have an exact count in front of the White House. Anti-war protesters upset by the president's decision to attack Iraq. Standing by in Washington, along with Doug Poling and Ben Works in New York, we have Rob Armstrong and Wyatt Andrews. Question first for Rob and for Wyatt both. Either one of you pick up anything out of the ordinary, anything unexpected in the president's remarks?
I did not. I think it was very much a restatement of the president's goals. As Wyatt pointed out a short while ago, he was specific about what was going to happen as far as targets right now. He said very specifically the goal is to destroy Saddam Hussein's tanks, to destroy his nuclear capability, his chemical and biological capabilities. But by and large, I thought the speech was in many ways reassuring. It was designed to reassure the American people. Wyatt, your assessment?
I found most striking in the surprising category the fact that the president would take as much time as he did addressing the potential Arab population that might be out there listening, especially in Iraq. He appealed directly to the Iraqis to, if they have the chance and Saddam isn't, to be blunt, killed in this first wave, that they should perhaps take matters in their own hands. He appealed to the Iraqis, telling them point blank that the United States does not seek the territorial conquest of their country, and in fact would invite them at the end of all this to rejoin the community of nations. You will find, as the dust settles, that statements like that are very, very important so that just in case the United States might win the war and lose the peace, it's very important that the United States stress from the beginning. And I found it surprising that the president started this early to address the Arab concerns about what we are up to.
Several concerns were voiced today, though, Wyatt, especially on Capitol Hill, that what might happen is, in fact, that we win the military side, but then Saddam Hussein gets to declare victory and, in fact, appears to be a victor in the eyes of the Arab world when all of this is over.
Yes. And it's also important to note that Mr. Bush, who has been often accused of not having any vision, laid out so much of what he saw as the vision. He is asking Americans to go in harm's way, to put their lives on the line for a future world in which, as he put it tonight, no nation should be allowed to stand against the world. Again, as many commentators have pointed out, this is not the kind of war being launched where a gun is at the temple of the United States. This is a concept war, a war that we are fighting for intellectual principles, in which Mr. Bush is trying to push the notion that this dictator must be stopped now rather than later. And tonight, in this speech, he made that case as eloquently as he ever has.
Some reaction beginning to come in. House Speaker Thomas Foley issued a written statement. He has not appeared before cameras or microphones. He said in his statement, "We must now pray for a conflict that ends quickly, decisively, and with a minimum loss of life."
You're listening to continuous coverage of Operation Desert Storm from CCO Radio. Rich Holter's
Denny, of course, will be going to the Pentagon for their briefing at about 8:30 Twin Cities time. Right now, let's rejoin CNN in Baghdad. Bernard Shaw, John Holloman, and Peter Arnett.
Our loved ones about how things are there. Bernie?
Yes, I was just, Ingrid has been sitting here on the floor. I don't know how you managed to get past those guards and make that long hike up those 14 stories that I made about an hour ago. But what is the situation in the bomb shelter? And, Ingrid, you know all of the members of the press corps, the other American networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, they've been highly concerned about their people. So take your time now and give us a feel on what the situation is in the bomb shelter.
Well, what you can see from up here, you can hear down in the shelter is low, very low and quiet thumps. There was a little bit of confusion at the beginning. The press went down there, other hotel guests, hotel employees who also live in a compound nearby. A number of mothers and their children at a certain time, perhaps half an hour after the attack started, you heard chants of down Bush, so we even had a little demonstration down in the shelter. The interesting thing was that some of the government guys that accompany us during the day when we try and work and some of the hotel security people are walking around with Kalashnikovs and gas masks, which is something that was a little bit of a surprise to see. And I did see a lot of our colleagues down there, some of them who had been up on higher floors taking pictures, and they were taken by security people downstairs to a shelter, ostensibly for our own protection. Bernie?
And what is the mood of the people in the shelter?
Well, it's actually quieted down a lot. The confusion has ceased. Some of the people have gone to sleep. There's still a lot of milling around. The people are trying to get the BBC or anything to know what's going on in the outside world. There's a lot of questions about what's going on in Kuwait, Jordan, Israel, other spots that may be involved. And people are very curious to come above ground, waiting for daylight just to see what has happened.
Even in the midst of these raids around the Baghdad, life goes on. And as incredible as it sounded incredible to my ears, John Holloman, a rooster crowing about 20 minutes ago as the bombs were going off out there over the horizon. Very strange sound.
I'll say, Bernie, and it's a long time before sunrise here. It's still a couple of hours before we're going to see the first rays of sunlight off to the east. But this rooster was obviously confused by all the military hardware arrayed and displayed in the skies of Baghdad. Peter Arnett's standing by to talk to us some more, but I'm just going to look out the window once before I give the microphone to Peter. You can still see flashes in the sky, but still, strangely, eerily, there are no fires, which is an indication. President Bush said in his speech that they were not attacking civilian targets here. They were attacking specific military targets, and it appears that's correct from everything we can observe from our window.
Yes, thank you, John. By my watch in this dim light of this hotel room, this raid, these series of raids have been going on for about 2 hours and 50 minutes. They began at around 2:30 Baghdad time in the center of the city. The government installations or installations of one kind or another, maybe anti-aircraft, strategic communication centers, began in the center and stayed in this particular part of town for about an hour and a half. But they are moving outwards, a large perimeter, all around the horizon, we see explosions. There must have been scores and scores of raids that we have witnessed so far. Witnessed, when I say we witnessed, we've seen the flashes and we have seen the anti-aircraft fire going up. But it's obvious that these raids are continuing, and we can see the evidence of that.
Correspondents Bernard Shaw, John Holloman, and Peter Arnett reporting from the Al-Rashid Hotel, a 14-story building in downtown Baghdad. As I indicated earlier, we'll be joining CBS at 8:30 this evening for the Pentagon briefing on what has happened so far in Operation Desert Storm. But right now, we have Jan Urok on the line with us. Jan is at the meeting, a meeting of SOCOM, the Support Our Country's Military Group, in Maple Grove. Jan, what can you report tonight from that meeting?
Well, there are about, I would say, 25 or 30 people here, and it's basically what it is. It's a lot of people sitting around and watching TV and talking to each other. I have with me two members of SOCOM, Marilyn Dolezal and Mike Long. Marilyn is from Coon Rapids. Mike is from Osseo. I wonder if you'd both tell me what your reaction is to the president's speech tonight.
Well, I just think he reassured the nation that what he said he would do, he did. And that's pretty much what I saw from the thing.
Well, and what were your thoughts? I'm hopeful that everything he says comes true. What was your reaction? I know I heard a lot of people expressing disbelief tonight, even though we've been preparing for this for a long time. What was your reaction when you heard about it?
Well, in the back of my mind, I couldn't believe it, but I knew it was going to happen. And my heart just sunk to my knees. I said, oh, my God, we are in war.
What about you?
Well, I thought, it eventually had to happen. You're going to have to deal with this person sooner or later, and the sooner the better. And everybody wants their kids home, and whatever branch of service they're in, and it just seems like the only way to get them home is through Iraq.
And I know this is probably hard to say in a couple of minutes, but what do you think about as you look ahead to the next few days? How are you going to get through this?
Well, I just, I'm a firm believer in our country and what we stand for and all the history that the country has went through, and I just think we'll get through it. The only thing that's going to bother me a little bit is maybe when they send the ground troops in, there's going to be some lives lost, and I really feel for those families of whatever branch of service they're in, you know, and these protesters that are out there, that just makes it worse. You know, especially when they burn the flag and slit the deer and throw it up in the front of the federal building and stuff. That just makes me sick, really. So it makes a negative thing for the kids that are over there that are defending their country.
How about you, Marilyn?
Well, I just believe that those protesters, I mean, they can do what they want to do, but for heaven's sake, give support to the boys that are over there, because they are doing it for our country and for you.
That's another thing I've heard here over and over tonight is keep the letters going. I've heard people talking about getting through this by helping each other and by making sure that mail keeps going to the service personnel who are there. Thank you very much, Marilyn and Mike, for being with us tonight. Well, that's about it. People are just sitting around and talking and being very supportive of one another.
All right, Jan. That's Jan Urok in Maple Grove at a meeting of SOCOM, Support Our Country's Military. We are going back to the network, CBS, for coverage of the Pentagon briefing in just a moment. I'm Rich Holter. This is WCCO Radio, continuous coverage of Operation Desert Storm. Before we go back to Washington, let's go to the state capitol where Eric Escala is standing by. Eric, we have about 2 minutes. And before we return to Washington, I know you've talked to a number of people at the capitol this evening. What's been the mood?
Well, another extraordinary night here at the state capitol, Rich. Unprecedented situation where a governor's state of the state address scheduled for tonight about 90 minutes ago was postponed by Governor Carlson and the DFL leadership of the Minnesota House and Senate. And Governor Carlson came out about an hour ago and had a brief statement to reporters about the Persian Gulf situation and about the state's role in all this.
The tragedy of war makes this a moment of great sadness and concern for all of the people of the United States and Minnesota. Our thoughts and our prayers tonight are with the President and all those involved in the war in the Middle East. Adjutant General Eugene Andriotti of the Minnesota National Guard is being kept abreast of developments in the Middle East and any possible impact on Minnesota. This week, I asked Chris Sanda, the Commissioner of Public Service, to head Minnesota's Emergency Preparedness Council, which consists of John Riley, the Commissioner of Transportation, Ralph Church, the Commissioner of Public Safety, Darrell Peterson, the Chairman of the Board of Public Utilities, and Adjutant General Andriotti. This group has already met to review emergency plans and prepare contingency operations throughout the entire state, particularly as they may pertain to utilities, transportation, and other vital services. The energy supplies and petroleum reserves of Minnesota are sufficient and are expected to remain stable. I would encourage every Minnesotan tonight, before they go to bed, to take a moment and say a prayer, to pray for our country, for its leadership, and for the world.
Arnie Carlson commenting just about an hour ago, Rich.
All right, Eric, I know
office, and we'll come back and have some congressional reaction to what's going on after the Pentagon briefing.
Very good. We're in a short break now by the network, and in just a few moments, We expect the Pentagon briefing to begin with, But in the meantime, a retired Air Force general says the war in the Persian Gulf could be a short one if all goes well. And early indications are that everything is going as planned. Retired General Doyle Larson says this early air approach taken by the U.S. is the best strategy.
There is a possibility that with our overwhelming capability and the fact that Iraq is really very vulnerable to air attack, there's no place to hide. I think there is a possibility that we might see either the overthrow of Saddam Hussein by some of his generals, or some intermediary will come in and sue for peace on their behalf.
And while there reportedly has been little resistance, as expected, General Larson says the pilots had many fears as they left on their missions late this afternoon.
I'm sure the adrenaline is really pumping, and every pilot, I'm sure, has been just keyed up and concerned and scared, no question about it. This is, when you face possible death like this and people are shooting back at you, if you're not scared, you're crazy.
Retired Air Force General Doyle Larson, who will be a guest tomorrow morning here on WCCO Radio. We're coming up on 8:31 in the Twin Cities, and we'll now rejoin CBS for an update from the Pentagon, a Pentagon briefing on Operation Desert Storm.
This is CBS News continuing coverage of the outbreak of hostilities in the Persian Gulf. Defense Secretary Cheney at the Pentagon is about to begin a briefing, so let's listen to the Secretary of Defense.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know you all heard the speech a short time ago by the President. And while there is not a great deal we can add now, we did want to be as forthcoming as we can with you. At 7 o'clock tonight, as you all know by now, Eastern Time, 3 o'clock Thursday morning in the Gulf, the armed forces of the United States began an operation at the direction of the President to force Saddam Hussein to withdraw his troops from Kuwait and to end his occupation of that country. At the direction of the President, I signed the execute order yesterday afternoon to undertake this operation, subject to certain conditions. It was to begin only after